seventh kingdom of life.
The seventh kingdom.
The seventh kingdom.
The seventh kingdom.
The seventh kingdom.
The human side of technology.
Welcome back to another episode of The Seventh Kingdom. This is Jason, and I'm here with my man Jay. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm a little hot, but good. It's getting toasty up here in the valley.
Yeah, that's why I'm staying closer to the ocean. Sorry.
Yeah, usually I would be saved by my air conditioner, but I have it off for sound.
You're welcome, listeners.
Yeah. So today I thought you and I had kind of pinged back and forth on some different subjects, and just this concept of, I think it was Kevin Kelly, kind of the founding father, even of the namesake of this podcast, in a recent interview, talked about this shift that I think he really focuses on in his book, The Inevitable, which just came out, from an internet of information to an internet of experiences, and in particular, how that applies to virtual reality.
Yeah, this is,
and I thought it would be really fun for us to kind of just chat about this concept, even of like moving into this age of experiences versus just media, in a sense, and like what even distinguishes the two.
Yeah, it's an interesting subject, and there's a lot of aspects to it. So I'm excited to sort of explore this with you. I've been thinking about this a bunch recently, especially since listening to his interview on Tim Ferriss about the book.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what kind of brought it right back into my consciousness. There was even this phrase I pulled out that he was talking about, of like the difference between like a VR experience and, you know, looking at a photo or listening to a song or just some of this other stuff. It's just you remember something happening versus remember seeing something.
Yeah.
I just love the tangible and somewhat intangible fuzziness of that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when people hear about first experiences in VR, which is obviously a big part of this, and people start describing things that are not usual with other types of more detached experiences or more seeing something, even including playing video games. A lot of people describe really, truly losing track of time, like thinking that they've been in this VR goggles for 2-3 minutes and 20 have passed. People, and I remember my one of my first experiences in VR was the oddly enough the first time we met in person, and I remember the first VR experience of the sort of flying mechanism with the wristbands, where I was sure that I was about to smash into a building, and my body reacted as if it's real, which is no matter how immersed I am in a video game on my PlayStation and my TV, just doesn't have that experiential component that is so visceral and changes your perspective of the difference between just looking at a certain thing or remembering something or remembering having the experience of doing it or having it.
Yeah, that feels like an important somewhat distinguishment. It's like particularly reflectively for me, yeah, it's that feeling of like it's actually a memory and not like a memory of something happening. It's such a subtle thing.
Yeah. It's funny because we don't even yet have the words for it, and yet we notice the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've had, I've had smaller versions of that, I think, in traditional media that I can certainly speak to in my own experience of like, I feel like at their highest, in their highest form, when it's like everything is fully firing in a correct way, certainly cinema has given me a few experiences like that, and video games as well. One I've talked about, I think, on this podcast often before, for me, is totally Jurassic Park. When I was a kid, I mean, literally the montage sequence of them flying into the island up until seeing the first dinosaur and then like the panorama of like a wild jungle full of animals.
Yeah.
Like it's actually more of a first person memory to me.
Fascinating.
Even though I was sitting in a theater watching something, what makes that, what is, I feel into it, like what feels different about that is like I can feel the awe and like energy in my body of, wow, this is novel.
Yeah.
In a sense, like I really felt there in a way that I hadn't previously in you know, in cinema in some ways. And a lot of that was just due to the increased fidelity of the visual, I would say even.
Yeah. I think I've had those experiences, especially in an IMAX screen where it just covers your field of vision and the sound and the whole environment, where, and especially in cinema and just films that are crafted so well to make you forget yourself.
Yeah.
And sort of blend into the experience where you really forget that you're sitting in a theater, and those moments are just remarkable, and they leave an impact for sure.
Absolutely. And I've certainly, and I guess I would say there's maybe even a spectrum, you know, and what I'm talking to is kind of the lighter side of it. And I think what we're going to explore a little bit more, VR is certainly the deeper side, but I've also had those experiences definitely with video games, specifically two that come to mind, where it's like, it's not so much a memory of myself playing the game, but it's a memory of like that world. Yes. That actually feels like it's a memory in that space, where definitely, you know, there were 6 months a decade ago where I was fully addicted to World of Warcraft. And there are some moments generally in that same way with Jurassic Park where there were more about the worldly exploration moments.
Yeah.
Of like flying or being on top of a mountain and having like this grand feeling of perspective. And like it took me a while to travel there, literally, even in the virtual world, or like the landscape is so stunning that like I'm like, there was a feeling of just elation or something about, you know, wonder in that game. And then in a different way, totally freaking the last Grand Theft Auto, I can vividly remember, I think there, because of the texture of the day and even the way the latest one was set in L.A.,
yeah,
which I live in L.A., so there was this like kind of overlap of that similarity of locations to real life. And yeah. I just remember moments in that game like they are memories. In the same, like when I like flew over this hill or like crested this mountain or was like running down the beach and people were yelling at me.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I suddenly had a quick memory, and this is a little bit different, but I think it ties in, of the first game I've played that had this weird effect where we played it so much, and it happened to be the first GTA where you're watching everything from above and you're driving around and running around. Where we played it so much that when I would close my eyes, I would still see the game playing. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. And again, I think there's something that once you're immersed or you're in it for a long enough time, really there's a sort of blending in. But I totally hear what you're saying about having the memory of the experience itself, as opposed to just of you playing the game or the experience that happens in the game while you're playing it, but just the game thing, just the occurrence itself in the game is the memory.
Yes, exactly. And those are like light versions of it. I mean, and what I think, if I had to distinguish what I imagine is different and what we're moving towards with VR, is like greater embodiment, meaning a more full engagement of our senses.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my guess is partly what helps encode it more as like a first person experience versus just like remembering, witnessing a piece of media.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we talked about it a little bit in the last episode about lucid dreams, where you're basically, despite knowing that it's not real, you're having an experience that it affects you positively or negatively, depending on the experience, just as much as in a quote-unquote real experience. They're both experiences. And I'm wondering if the attraction to VR for so many people is a similar attraction that some people have to lucid dreams, of having these immersive experiences that they might not be able to have otherwise, or just you know, getting a glimpse or getting an experience of just something different.
Yes. Yeah. That in that same way, I feel like stimulates, at least in me, a part of my nervous system. I feel that's like predisposed to like novelty and wonder and newness.
Yeah.
Like in some ways is the exact same thing I feel like when I hike up a big mountain. And it's like, wow, this feels. You know, I'm feeling.
Yes.
And I feel like that becomes possible in virtual reality in some really exciting ways. And just this concept of it's so funny. I'm thinking of this story I have from my own experience of like, I graduated college in 2002. And like so many people, I did a Euro backpacking trip, right, where I traveled around Western Europe primarily. And definitely one of the places I remember the most is Venice and the experience of being in that city and in the narrow streets and on the canals and just like the energy of that place. And about 2.5 years later, after I had done that trip, I found myself living back in Illinois in the suburbs of Chicago, working tech support for an online university in like the most corporate setting you could imagine. And I worked the night shift. And I vividly remember one day, you know, being a slightly bored person during a break and whatever, like walking around and kind of peeking into cubicles of the shift that was there during the day.
Yeah.
And there was one guy, I peeked into his cubicle and I saw on the wall a picture of like a gondola and a canal. And I was like, oh, fucking hey, great. This guy's been to Venice. How cool. Like, you know, I got curious and I got excited and I walked up and I looked at the picture. And then I'm looking at it and I'm like, wait a second. This feels off. And then I'm looking at it more and I realize it's the Venetian in Vegas. And like immediately I have this judgment of like, oh, like how tacky and what bad taste, you know, like why would you put up a picture of your trip to like a fake hotel in Vegas? And then, you know, as I sat with that over coming weeks and years, I just realized that like to that person though, they may never ever go to Venice.
Yeah.
But that experience at the Venetian was like a mediated version of that in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, like a real life attempt to recreate that time and place and energy. And yeah, I'm just sharing that because it just reminds me of like, I know already, right? People are going to have all kinds of judgments about, well, if you did it in VR, it's not the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But also like, there's a lot of amazing things on this planet that literally not everyone could do, because if they did, they'd be destroyed instantaneously.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting. I was thinking about, you know, going to Mars. That will not a very long time might actually be a real possibility. But going to space is something that I've always wanted to do, and I might not get the chance. And VR might facilitate that. But I'm fascinated by your story because until you said that, I haven't really thought about the fact that Vegas in some weird way and in some ways not too shabby of a way of selling experiences, recreating experiences of the world to some degree or another.
Yeah.
Some better, some worse, and we can have our judgments about it. But in even putting all of them, you know, together at a place where some people can come and experience it that might never get to there. And have some of that, have a taste of that at the very least, which is better than nothing. And it's its right. Own experience.
Going back to even our last episode in terms of like this, what I imagine a correlation between information and perspective and growth, it's like, yes, okay, maybe that's not quite as amazing in his experience as actually having the resources and the ability to go spend time in Venice. But even if it's 50% as stimulating, let's just say, that's still more than zero.
Right.
And I imagine like with virtual reality, that's like what a fertile territory to have opening up to us, where it's like, God, it even reminds me, did you at the VR thing last year, did you do the one where they had set up like the zone that had the sensors, so you actually like walked around in it?
Yes.
And it was the, what, it was like a city? I don't remember what city it was.
Yeah, somewhere in the Middle East, right?
Yeah. I can't remember what city, but like, what a viscerally, I mean, it was a pretty crude form of it.
Right.
In that, like, the technology and the graphics weren't that great, but you're like, I remember,
you
right?
You can see it's where
like,
it's going, yeah.
Yeah, walking down this, like, city street, and it's like, oh, isn't this interesting? And kind of looking around and following my curiosity, and then boom, a, like, bomb goes off.
Yeah.
Like a terrorist attack. And it was, like, genuinely shocking and surprising in a way that I was not expecting.
Yep.
And again, like, not quite the same as not quite as traumatic as having that experience, I would say, firsthand, but probably a more closer approximation of what that's like for my nervous system to experience than anyone else.
Yeah.
And that experience has definitely stayed with me.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It was definitely impactful, and it's going to get more and more not only realistic, but sort of refined in a variety of ways, from the technology itself and the resolution and the sort of 3D sound of it and all of that, as well as to the production. And, you know, people like you are working on, you know, films and VR and facilitating experiences, basically. And I think that the more this continues technologically as well, the more the debate about how do we define real or how do we define real experience would come into debate, and we might have to revise it anywhere from you know, a VR experience or going to a sort of fake replica of Venice or a dream for that matter. And would we consider these things less real or not as valid of experiences as what we call waking life or just a normal day-to-day perception?
Yeah, totally.
Especially if we get to one day to just sort of plug in directly to our sense, you know, modulators in the brain and go directly in, which in terms of technology is just a matter of time. It might not be in our lifetime, but it's not inconceivable at all.
And absolutely not.
Yeah. And what I found interesting in Kevin Kelly's, one of his comments, and tell me if you think I remember this actually correctly or if I misunderstood what he was saying, but there is a corresponding technological advancement that would actually bring about this sea of trading experiences or selling experiences, as opposed to selling media or selling content or something like that, where with automation and with no longer having to do as many jobs or work as much, if we're going in the direction of basic income and automation and robots and artificial intelligence, people will actually finally, as history was actually already doing to some degree or another, but free us to actually create and explore and experience. And life would become more about having experiences of all sorts. And that's an interesting sort of aspect of it.
And a complete and total shift. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just brings up so much, right? Because there's the transformational capacity of that, in a sense, like, and even what you're talking about in lucid dreaming and here in VR, I think one of the baseline fascinating things about it is, even though we can tap into this feeling of it being real, it's ultimately safe, right?
Yeah.
So you get to fire up the kind of central nervous system, in a sense, but ultimately know it's safe and get to do all kinds of just crazy, crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, even in that idea of swapping it, it makes me think of, which kind of explores somewhat more the dark sides of it, but one of my favorite movies that in some ways I feel like was way ahead of its time, Strange Days from 1995, where people are swapping their firsthand experiences, and like anything else, certain addictions come out of that.
Yeah.
Some really deep perversions come out of that in terms of like the types of experiences people are recording or sharing or kind of yearning for.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a film, and now I can't remember the name of it. And I think it was an independent film where in the future, individuals sell their memories as experiences or something like that. And it's kind of crazy to think that we'll be able to do things of that nature, whether we're sort of artificially, quote unquote, creating them on a computer, or, you know, get to a level of technology where we can actually share our own experiences in a form other than just sort of photos and sort of flat, non-dynamic experiences.
Right. And it's just one of those things that, like, kind of like self-driving cars in some regards. It's the more I just like sit with it, and the more it's like, wow, like that will really change a lot. Like the coming of this, for one, like it's just geographical location in some ways won't have the same gravity maybe it necessarily had before, in terms of like, if I can just, you know, tap in and be on the top of Everest, do I need to go to Everest? You know, do I need to live on the beach? Like, I just wonder. I really wonder.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it can definitely go into the debate of if we can realistically simulate other experiences. Is it real? Does it have the same value? Would traveling to somewhere actually become even more expensive in some ways, because, you know, people have the psychological attachment of this is a genuine experience versus an artificial experience, even if they were, let's say, indistinguishable. Because people, you know, if they bought a jacket or some item that they know a person, a famous person had it, it gains more value because it's a genuine article that they own or something like that. So I'm curious what effect that would have on having quote unquote real experiences with versus either virtual or somebody else's experience or something like that.
Oh, that's it. It's just interesting with that. I love that. It reminds me of when I was in film school, like half of my program was theory, and there's one article that has just always stuck with me. And it was by this guy named Walter Benjamin, I think. And he was a scholar in Germany, I think, leading up to World War II. But he wrote this fucking amazing article that actually I think is just as radically interesting today, called The Work of Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction. Mm-hmm. And it was like this exploration into kind of that intangible thing about like, what's the difference between, okay, so now we can take the Mona Lisa and we can reproduce it with 100% fidelity, basically, let's just say, mm-hmm. ad nauseum, right? It's just, it can be anywhere, you can see it anywhere. Like, what's the difference between standing and watching or looking at that versus literally standing in front of the painting, which is, you know, however many hundreds of years old now, and which however many, I don't know, millions of people have stood in front of.
Yeah.
Like, what's the, is there a subtle dimension or a subtle thing that distinguishes those two? Because that feels like it goes to the heart of this VR thing as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. I've thought about it a lot, and I'm not sure I came to a conclusive conclusion. Because, again, is there an aspect by which we are sort of self-delusional or just attaching a significance to something that is, for all intents and purposes, indistinguishable? Because at the same degree, you can swap out the Mona Lisa to a replica. And again, if they're one-to-one, and nobody would know, but just because you tell them that's the original, they will have the experience and the sensation and the memory of saying, I saw the original. And yet they didn't. So it gets really tricky when you get to that level.
Oh, how freaking fun and exciting that's going to be.
Yeah.
Morally ambiguous in many, many, many ways.
Yeah.
It's interesting, you know, even thinking about Vegas and what you're talking about with Kevin Kelly, just like, and this general kind of cultural shift to even just outside of VR, the increased commodification of like experiences, meaning like, right, I'm seeing it in Hollywood, even in the cinema, right? Like, okay, people aren't going to the movies anymore, so they're trying to make, so you have these theaters doing these radical experiments of, you know, like serving you food and couches and live music beforehand, all kinds of stuff to try to like distinguish that experience from just watching it at home.
But, yeah.
Or, you know, I would say probably outside, you know, in the art world, probably the most visceral standing example that's already alive for me in culture already is like the difference between going to a live show of a band I love and listening to a recording.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is like this tangible kind of thing that is different. That like, yeah, I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And it's funny that you mention cinema and what they're sort of trying to do. I'm not even sure that you're aware of it, but I wrote an article about just that.
Oh, no, I'm not. I have to read that now.
I'll send you a link. It's called Cinematic Suicide. And I sort of really dig into some of those experiments and why I think they're missing the mark.
Yeah.
But I do think that there is a crucial aspect to why people no longer or not as much going out to see a movie in theaters, and why they're watching at home or foregoing some aspect of it for convenience, let's say. But I do believe that until maybe VR really comes in and circumvents or surpasses rather, experientially, the effect that a big theater with a giant screen has. Until then, I do think there is an aspect of sitting in a theater that is unique and cannot be replicated that still holds tremendous value.
I totally 100% with you there as a cinephile. There's definitely a subtle energy experience of literally even just having that many bodies in the room, witnessing something like as a group, there's something very energetically impactful to me. The same thing with live music, right? That's like
exactly
the energy, like literally the energy of the crowd having this shared experience, which it will be interesting to see how that kind of translates in this like VR world.
Right. And I've already heard about people talking about shared VR experiences where even they're literally watching a movie in VR, but the biggest difference that they experience is sitting next to some other virtual person. They're not a virtual person, but the virtual avatar of a real person that they've never met before, or is just on another side of the planet or something like that. And now we're facilitating these hybrid experiences that we couldn't quite do before, where again, we're removing the obstacle of location for shared experiences.
That is a great way to put it. Yes.
I think that's going to make a big difference. And that's going to be a big part of, because again, like you're saying with live music, I mean, I can easily point to all the reasons why being at a concert is even less good than listening to the pristine audio of a pre-recorded sound on good headphones. And yet, you know, despite being very far from the stage and barely seeing the person and all this extra noise and sweaty people, there is something about the shared experience that we can't quite replicate in a sort of isolated, you know, you're just sitting at home, you know, watching it and seeing the crowd in the screen even of a live recording, but you don't really feel that aspect of it.
Yes. The word visceral comes up for me. which, as I like even think about that word in relationship to these VR experiences, it's like in some ways tying it back into the perspective thing. Like, my hope is right in the, you know, one of my favorite Roger Ebert quotes and why I adored him so much was, I think he said it was just like, cinema is the ultimate empathy machine.
Oh, I was getting, I wanted to get to that, yeah.
Yeah, and it feels like, right, yes, and VR might be that times 1,000.
Yeah.
In the sense of like what we were just talking about with the city experience and the bombing, or I definitely remember at that VR thing thinking about like even the implications. I think the person that set that up, we were talking about in terms of field reporting, like what a viscerally different experience it would be, like, you know, when the tsunami hit a couple of years ago, like, yeah, it's kind of one thing to like read about it in a paper,
yeah,
but to like put on a helmet and be like in the center of that devastation, I just feel like would be 1,000 times more empathic for me to like really get a sense of the destruction and what happened there.
Yeah, I think there already there is already a program in the UN. I think with those, you know, sort of field reporting, 360 VR recordings, and I remember when, it's funny because I remember when Periscope came out, the app where you can sort of live stream your from your phone, and I love the name Periscope. It's sort of a like this little lens into somebody's perspective.
Yeah.
I remember reading I think TechCrunch or an article about empathy machines, and even Periscope itself, which is the sort of most minimal little eye hole into somebody else's perspective, was already referred to as empathy machines and a facilitator of empathy. I can't even imagine what that would be when the experience is as encompassing as something as virtual reality, that's just sort of measures above and beyond just the video and audio of your iPhone from where you are. And I, what I haven't seen yet and would be absolutely remarkable once we achieve this level is live VR streaming of that sort.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I haven't even...
That's like literally breaking down the space-time
yeah.
barrier in sense of being two places at once. Yeah, wow, that's a trip to think about. That's,
yeah.
It's weird even thinking, just makes me think about like sociologically, you know, fabricating in a sense, but like imagining being a student going into history class 20 years from now. And it's like, okay, we're gonna learn about ancient Egypt now. And the difference between like reading text and looking at some drawings versus like, okay, we're literally going to ancient Egypt now.
Well, this is fascinating, and you have to think about also the, you know, we'll probably recreate, you know, ancient Egypt and other historical places and events. But now we're getting to the technology when we're recording our current events, and
yes,
in the future, they will literally, quite literally, not go back and experience a recreation of some past historical events, but the actual events as captured by multiple cameras, audio mics, and drones that measure the spacing and, you know, the environment, and that probably will add the temperature and the angle of the sun and just everything that will really put you in that place with as much fidelity as we can muster, and this will just only get better and better throughout time. So history in the future will look vastly different than we have it today.
That's wow. I'm just realizing, like, right, thinking back to the importance or like the significance of the recordings we have of the moon landing.
Yeah,
and there is literally 0% chance by the time a human gets to Mars, they will not have devised a capture device for that.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, they will stream some kind of broadcast in a traditional sense, but they're going to fucking broadcast it to, like, our Oculuses.
Yeah, it just... Really? It,
like the first time one man gets on Mars in some extent, like, is going to be the first time a large, like, not truly in the sense of geographically being there, but like a large portion of our population is going to be able to simultaneously experience that. Whoa. I'm just I'm just super excited by this. Like, what a trip.
Yeah. This is quite mind blowing. I haven't even thought of that until you mentioned it, but you know, there's people of a certain age that they all remember that moment, sitting in front of their TV with their parents or at school, watching the moon landing on this blurry black and white screen, and thinking that there will be a generation and we might get the chance to get to tag along on the trip and landing on Mars for the first time in a just extremely more visceral and immersive one-to-one live experience. That's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, talk about a out-of-body experience. I mean, just imagine the person on Mars looking back at Earth and being here on Earth, seeing, like, right? In not quite real time because of the, you know,
the
speed of light, but still, like, I'm very excited for this moment now.
Yeah. Elon Musk, if you're, I know you're listening to the big fan of this podcast, so just make sure you're sending some VR gear and a streaming service over there.
Oh my God, seriously. How exciting.
That's going to be amazing.
VR experiences, that world is coming.
Yeah, definitely.
And like what a, just what an amazing, I feel like, opportunity for, right? There's also a democratizing effect to it, I hope, in the sense of as a white guy in the United States of America in 2016, you know, I'm amongst the most privileged on the planet in terms of the experiences I get to have and have had the opportunity to have, and to think like we said, not 100%, but for more of the beauty and awesomeness of the world to become more accessible to more people.
Yeah.
It feels super amazing to me.
Yeah. I'm already seeing variations of that, and not just going to keep expanding to more people who have less access at the moment, but you see, sort of really old people getting a VR experience of something they, you know, could no longer go and see or experience, or
right. That's one of the that's kind of one of the first big Oculus videos, wasn't it? Of the guy puts it on his grandma, and she gets to walk around. I think that Italian villa or something, and just starts crying.
Yeah. It's gonna be amazing, and you know, grandparents seeing their grandchildren in some other place in the world, or again, people who cannot travel, whether for financial means or, you know, for other means. And I'm curious, I'm also thinking that it's probably important that we touch on the possibility of downsides and negative aspects of this.
Yes.
We actually haven't really gotten to, but now that I think about it, that the democratization, which is, I think, something that is important that we'll make sure happens. But I wonder if, in many things, sort of monopolies might actually curate the types of experiences and the types of access people get, or what other unknowns of the sort of potential dark side of these technologies might actually suddenly pop up that we have a hard time, predicting in advance.
Totally, right? Like any technology, particularly that impacts our states. I feel like there's two things immediately come up. One, there's, for every light side, there's a dark side. So for every great experience we could record, there's clearly going to be a Faces of Death VR experience, which is killing someone or seeing someone firsthand, you know, awful things like that happening and getting swapped. And then also the my fan favorite here, taking it to the Matrix, there's this the cipher effect of addiction is already
right.
a deep problem in our culture. In some ways, VR could be the ultimate perfect drug. I mean, not even VR, right? There's the stories from six to eight years ago of like people in internet cafes. You know, I don't know how true they are, but it feels like there's actually some recorded pieces I feel like we could dig up of playing StarCraft or Warcraft, like so long they died, like they neglected their bodies.
I mean, people get addicted to porn on a flat screen and on their desk. So
yeah.
Imagine what happens with VR. I mean, this is tricky territory.
So yeah, I imagine like, you know, if I was living in the kind of situation where I was living in a slum or something, and then I could put on a helmet and be in Yosemite, like it'd be pretty easy to get addicted to staying in there and preferring that to reality, just like the guy in the Matrix, right?
Yeah, and I wonder where do we draw the line, or where the difference is between just being able to experience something elsewhere, or escapism, literally, quite literally, avoidance of your situation and where you are to a detrimental degree, or in a way that's not really conducive to a better life or more well-being. I don't know. I really am trying to figure out in what cases would we consider a wonderful use of VR to go and have an experience that you can't because of your surroundings, condition, financial situation, or whatnot? And where is it escapism, where that becomes so much more appealing than your current condition, where this is actually detrimental and addictive, and again, your escapism in the sense that you're not actually dealing with the situation that you have, and that could be one of the negative sides of it that is bound to happen almost.
Absolutely, and it just like feels like in some ways the most potent form of a conversation. You know, I've been exploring a lot in my own life from more the transformational side of things is like, when with any technology or anything that generates a strong feeling, there are two ways to use it.
Yeah.
To get closer to myself and more in touch with what is real and what is true, or to avoid. And that's true from everything for me, from a carton of ice cream to virtual reality, to psychedelics, to music, to festivals, to sex, to like connecting, like to the internet.
Yeah.
And it just seems like this could potentially be a much, much stronger, more visceral version of that. I mean, I don't know about you, but I, even in my generation, grew up with the like, if you spend too much time in front of the TV, your eyes are going to go bad. Get outside, you know?
Yep.
And there's total partial truth to both of those sides of that argument. And I think that's just going to be even more intensified with VR.
Yeah. And let me pick your brain about something. As a filmmaker and a cinema enthusiast, and I know we touched upon it a little bit, and I mentioned the article that I wrote and sort of my gripe with cinema these days, is that as VR is coming in, it might be this crazy, beautiful, immersive, enveloping experience. There is this, there's a lot of debate between creating a VR environment and having 360 video. And what about films, and how do you now create just a film in cinema for VR? Do you go the 360 route? And my first inclination, and this is where I can't quite tell if I'm just getting old and like get off my lawn kind of thing, but what my initial desire for films in VR is simply taking an IMAX experience to the next level, meaning I don't actually feel, and I might change my mind once I experience this, but I don't actually wish for a 360 environment in which I can turn around and move forward and move backwards, or even just turn around at all and just see the thing. I just wanted a movie that covers my field of vision, where even if there's anything around it, it's complete blackness. There is no other people around me like there is in theater. and that I could, and that the film is fixed to the perspective of the VR goggles, meaning if I turn my head, the movie turns with it. And the reason I'm saying this, and this is what I want your take on in terms of VR experiences, especially as a cinema, is because what I think is so unique about a movie theater and what I call immersion in that context is not actually feeling like I'm in the film as much as forgetting that I exist completely.
Yeah, totally.
Like my favorite experiences in a movie theater is not sitting there and thinking, wow, this movie is so awesome, because I'm remembering that I'm sitting there and I'm in a theater and I'm watching a movie, which can be fun on its own, but when I forget myself completely and I'm truly immersed I just don't remember that I'm there until after the fact. Those are my favorite immersive experiences. And what cinema has been trying to do, unfortunately, was sabotaging this. Like there's the films with extended screens on the side, and then there's like the food, and there's all sorts of like shaking chairs and, you know, wind and all sorts of weird extra stuff that's like 4D or whatever they want to call it these days, that actually is taking me out of the movie because it's reminding me that I am in the movie theater. And I wonder in VR how that would come about and what would be an immersive experience in terms of not making me feel like I am one of the characters, but just making myself forget that I even exist to be fully with what's happening on the screen.
I love that. They're so, it brings up so much for me. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is, I agree, like all the 4D stuff and like all the gimmicks they're trying to bring to theaters, like even eating in a theater, I do not think that's a positive thing. Like, I don't want people eating. I don't want it to be a meal in a couch. Like, I'm like a Zen dude. I want you to be seated in darkness with your mouth shut facing forward, you know? Yeah. Like, that's my ideal experience. But what I think is curious about VR is I think it's a spectrum again. I think what we're going to see is a refinement of the spectrum in the same way the written word, in some extents, like there's poetry, there's short stories, there's long form stories.
Yeah.
It's the same medium in a sense, but different niches and explorations of that, which each have their own language and way of being and are good at different things. I think we'll see an emergence of that. In no way, shape, or form want VR to replace cinema as a movie lover myself. I actually think it's a very different state experience, like you're talking about. For one, right, in this increasingly frenetic lifestyle that most of us are plunged into, cinema is one of the only choice-free environments we get to go into, in terms of like, you're either to start... The only decision is, right, am I willing to sit here and keep watching the movie?
Yeah.
That's it. But, like, you're not having to choose where to go. Like, right, like, the choose-your-own-adventure thing from stories.
Yep.
There are times where I play video games and I avoid playing them because I don't even want to deal with the stress of making a choice. Like, well, if I go this way, I'm not going to get to see this ending. And if I go this way, I'm like, I don't want to fucking deal with that. A traditionally made movie is, like, the pleasure in watching it is someone else has already made all the choices.
Yeah.
Right. And that, I think that generates and puts the brain into a unique state, which, yeah, in some ways is like, I mean, it's not present in the sense of like what you're saying, like I'm not thinking of myself in my life. It's like, I'm so present that part of my brain's offline.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I just love and adore. What I do see maybe the VR, like in terms of a traditional setup being good for, is it's really potentially the ultimate screen, and just in terms of like a perfect screen, perfectly lit all the time, controlled environment, awesome. But I have, like, I know there's a lot happening now in terms of people trying to dissect and explore like what is the new emerging art form behind it.
Yeah.
Which it feels more like video game to me than it does movie in terms of like interactivity. Like that's what it can do that cinema can't. And if they try to make them the same, I mean, right, it's always failed.
Right.
We had the deluge of games in the 90s when CD-ROMs came out that tried to make games more like movies, and yeah. they sucked. They were terrible. They were just like Dragon's Lair, press a button and something happens. And it was like, that sucks. That's not what games, like games are good at something else. Let's focus on that.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's going to have to be explored and is being explored right now. Cause there's a whole new language that has to happen. Like cuts don't work in VR the same way they do on a screen.
Yep.
Or you can't just like cut. And I think my intuition about part of what's different, going to be different and valuable about VR, even storytelling versus cinema storytelling, is like cinema and cuts are literally all about compressing time. Mm-hmm. Like that's where all the magic happens, right? Right. Is that it does not have to happen in real time. We can compress, right? The time in most movies where people often feel the most emotion is when? It's in the montage. It's in this technology of compressing time and allowing us to see it in a certain way. Versus when I imagine what I'm most drawn to or potentially drawn to in VR, it's not about compressing time. It's more about real time. It's more about actually being in there and slowing down.
Yeah.
So like getting to have 20 minutes, being able to walk around 20 minutes the side of some hillside, you know, in France or something, mm-hmm. or getting to walk slowly across the edge of Mars, or being there for the birth of a giraffe, you know, whatever that is, like the actual linear nature of time, I feel like is probably what that's going to be best at, like it unfolding in real time and being there and having a little freedom to like look around and explore. I mean, exploring is also the word I feel like it's going to be good at. It's like, that's what gets me most excited as a man alive in 2016. I can't always get out into the woods and explore the world, but just the feeling of exploration and discovery that's even possible in virtual worlds that I imagine is going to be even stronger in virtual reality. Like, oh my God, that, like I get elated just thinking about that, of like when someone recreates some, like just to be able to walk through Pandora from Avatar. Like I would spend a day doing that. I would take a vacation day and do that virtually. 100%.
That's at the top of my wish list for VR.
Yeah, right? Like that's somewhere I want to be and time I want to spend. But do I need there to be like a cinematic story necessarily happening in that? No. Will one maybe emerge? Yes, and there's definitely a whole bunch of films coming out right now that are doing that, but I don't think no one's found the one that expresses that art form in its own unique way yet, I don't think. I'm certainly curious to maybe even help create an experience like that, but I think that's the difference between an experience and a narrative in some sense, and why I hope the two really do stay distinguished, like...
So the two interesting things that that stood out to me is I really think this is kind of the experimentation phase. Like nobody has quite figured it out, but people always say, oh, you know, the media should be specific to the medium or to the technology that facilitates it. And I think we might not even be aware of some of the best uses of this environment or virtual environment or the goggles or just VR in general, and people will start now trying and experimenting things with things and figure it out, and whatever will emerge might be something we don't actually expect. Like people are figuring out in like you said, the jump cut, and even in video games don't quite work in VR because you are in first person and most of the time, and they have to come up with, oh, you're teleporting or you're traveling in time, or there is some kind of effect that makes a transition out of it where it's not no longer jarring and takes you out of the experience. And in terms of the other thing that you said that's really reassuring is the whole spectrum, where this thing might not only allow for one type of experience, and that's really, really cool. So you might play video games on your TV and you might watch a movie or a TV show or a documentary, or just leave the screensaver on where you see these nice, you know, locations or something. And in VR, the variety of things, including maybe a static mega immersive screen would be one of the experiences people are doing, including 360 video and, you know, being on location, or whether you're watching something from a third-person perspective in the sky, or you're first-person, and this is supposedly your experience. So there's a lot to be had here, and I think they're just really scratching the surface in terms of what we can do and how it's going to look and how it's going to work and what are the types of experiences that VR is going to facilitate. And that's exciting to see.
Totally. And they might be, just to kind of wrap out, it reminds me of another experience I had at VR LA. Some of them might be way more subtle than we imagine. I remember one of the ones I actually remember the most from VR LA was basically Space Invaders in VR, and it was the traditional game, except they just put you in a cockpit.
Oh yeah.
And map Space Invaders to the cockpit. So it was basically exactly the same, except you could slightly turn your head to the left and the right, and you were kind of in this virtual cockpit. And it was still just kind of more fun that way.
Yeah, it was cool.
It didn't need to be first person. It still worked like having the screen in the virtual environment, so to speak. So yeah, it does seem like there's going to be this just fascinating spectrum emerging, and you know, in the same way that cinema didn't destroy music or books or storytelling or poems, I don't think VR is going to destroy all those mediums.
Yeah, and I think the exploration part too. The last thing I wanted to really say about this is that you notice, I mean, the sort of slow taking your time, just exploring of an environment, is some of the biggest thing on my VR wish list, including like visiting Pandora or having these sort of subtle floating experiences and the technodelics of sorts are a little more abstract. But you notice this sense of a pull towards exploration almost every time you see a person put on the goggles for the first time, or every time they try a new experience in VR, the first thing they do is they just look around and try to absorb the environment. It's exactly that. So that's kind of cool to see all the time.
Yeah, I think we have a natural wiring for that, I feel like, in some extent. You know, it's part of one of the better parts of humanity. All right, my man. Well, I think that probably covered a lot there in terms of the VR experiences.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely, if anyone has any comments or things they add, feel free to leave us a comment on the seventhkingdom.org, and we look forward to spending time again with you soon.
Yeah, that's gonna be fun.
Thanks, Jay.
Thank you, man. Talk soon.
Get more information about this episode and listen to previous episodes at www.seventhkingdom.org. The Seventh Kingdom podcast is produced by Jason Lang and Stan James, and this recording created by me, an unpaid computer program. Thank you for listening.